This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Well, good evening, everybody. We're back again. This is Professor Stanton along with my partner, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And we have so much to discuss.
So much.
In this program that literally we could be here till 4 o'clock in the morning.
24-hour show,
but due to the limitations of the station, we are relegated to the paltry half hour that they give us.
Yep.
How do we start our program today? Okay. Well, I just have a few things to say. You know, people talk about, you know, why our country is in the shape that it is. I try to approach it from like a scholarly point of view. Let's look at it this way. Let's look at our country as a big house. And this house is composed of three levels. It's composed, of course, of the president, who sits at the top of the house, I suppose, in a sense.
Head of the household.
The head of the household. Then we have, of course, the legislature, which supposedly works to pass laws that will benefit us.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. And then there's the third part of our house, which is the Supreme Court, which is supposed to adjudicate disputes between various parts of the government or various individuals and legal authorities. The reason that we have such little faith in our
house
is because our house is dysfunctional. Our house is not working. So let's look at the three branches of the government. First branch of government is the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not gonna beat this drum too many times more, but just to say, our president is perhaps well-intentioned, but he's not, as I see it, a leader. And people need a leader to guide them in times of great turmoil, which is what we're going through now.
Yeah.
Our legislature is basically totally ineffective because we cannot get bills passed and legislation passed because a certain person, who will remain nameless, has told the Speaker of the House, basically, to kill all legislation regarding immigration and other important matters
that might benefit
Joe Biden, even though it would also greatly benefit our country. But the third part of the House that's the most disturbing to me is the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court, particularly because the Supreme Court is supposed to be composed of individuals who have a high moral authority, who are not merely scholars or experts in the law, but also people who are highly ethical, people who want to maintain that high standard in the way they conduct themselves and want to promote those laws and those bills that would help all of us. I mentioned the Supreme Court last, but certainly not least, regarding the matter of the appeal by the states to remove the ex-president from the ballot in Colorado and in other states.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, the Constitution, as I read it, seems to be clear that if someone has committed obstruction, that would be a disqualifier from being able to run for office. Okay?
Yeah.
And of course, we know that the vote was 9-0 against what I thought was the opinion that it should have been.
9-0.
9-0.
9-0 is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Not even like 8-1.
Yeah, no.
7-2. 9-0.
Yeah. So anyway, my take on it is this. I have two takes on it. The first take on it is in throwing out what the various states had done, I find it very ironic, because how many times has this particular Supreme Court upheld states' rights? as far as women's rights are concerned,
yep.
as far as voting rights are concerned,
uh-huh.
as far as diversity is concerned, that time after time after time, the initiatives to promote diversity, the initiatives to promote wider voter access, the initiatives to protect the woman's right to choose, the woman's right to make her own choices for her body, have been completely repudiated by the court. All state-created decisions. Now, all of a sudden, when we have a situation regarding the insurrection, where basically it is a question of whether or not a person who basically tried to ferment a upheaval in the government, nullify the vote, and basically take over the country, that the states can't do it. But they've done everything else. Now why is that?
It makes me so angry, because it's like, it's the state's decision to decide what they want to do about women's bodies, and then as soon as it gets to like voting and stuff, it's no longer the state's right to make that decision.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so what classifies as like a state's right, and what classifies as like, I don't know, like not a state,
well,
right?
What was very disturbing to me, because I'm a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they come up with these different rationales for why they voted.
Yeah.
And we know that from past programs and just from the people who listen to this program, their own knowledge about how in many ways the Supreme Court is compromised,
mm-hmm.
because of the many gifts that were given to certain members of the court,
yeah.
that they would go around and travel and do all the rest of these things and yet still hear cases from people who had benefited them, as in the case of Clarence Thomas,
mm-hmm.
as in the case of people who are hearing matters which they should recuse themselves from hearing, such as in the case of Clarence Thomas, his wife being directly and prominently involved in trying to overthrow the government and throw out the vote.
Literally. Like, I don't know. I feel like, shouldn't, you would think like Clarence Thomas would like sit down and think like, dang, my wife literally like tried to overthrow like what I'm supposed to, like what I'm like heavily involved in.
Yeah. You would think that.
You would think that, but like...
Yeah. But what was most disturbing to me, is when they had the people who were commenting on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawrence Tribe, who is probably one of the four or five most preeminent scholars of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
He's been teaching at Harvard for 50 years.
Dang.
He was asked how he could justify the decision that they made, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was going to talk about some paragraphs that they put in.
Something like scholarly.
He just said they did the ex-president a favor.
Favor?
That's exactly what the man said.
A favor.
A favor. In other words, the Constitution, our laws really don't mean anything, that basically they've been co-opted, the Supreme Court. They've been co-opted.
I'm sorry. They're doing the ex-president yeah. who, you know, tried to overthrow the government, yeah. tried to cancel the vote.
Yeah. But they're doing him a favor.
They're doing him a favor.
Yeah, you see, because that's what our politics have come down to. Because one of the themes that we've talked about on this show for the better part of 3 years now is that the ex-president, he's just one person.
Yeah.
He's just one person. But the lack of justice, social justice, moral justice, legal justice is rampant through our system.
Uh-huh.
We do not have equality of justice. We do not have equality of law. We do not have people's belief anymore,
mm-hmm.
that if they're arrested, that they're going to get a fair trial. We're not at all now even posing the possibility that incarceration could be redemptive. Basically, what we have is a society. We have the highest rate of incarceration in the world. We have the highest rate of murder by gun in the world. We have the highest rate of mass shootings in the world. And there is no justice. There is no justice. There's no justice for people who are falsely incarcerated. There's no justice for people who are harmed in the prison while they're in the prison. There's no justice for the families of people who have been murdered by gun in mass shootings. And nothing seems to be able to be done about it. So when you have all those things, plus a case like this, what do you suppose would be people's feeling about actually what's going on in our country, which is that they don't believe in the precepts and the tenets of how the country was founded in the first place. I mean, what else would you conclude?
It's just chaos now.
Chaos is the right word.
Like, if you're in the government, you're working in the government. Your job is to serve the people.
Yeah.
Okay, but now these people who you're supposed to be serving don't believe in you at all. They have no hope in you.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, talking about justice.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a person of color, who lives in any state. Okay.
Uh-huh.
But particularly in a big city, where you have a bigger population, mm-hmm. and you have a lot of cases in the system and everything. Well, the vast majority of those people, a lot of times, won't be able to make bail.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that the system says that one of the most important things in the system of justice is that we have the right to a speedy trial.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposedly one of the landmarks of our system.
Mm-hmm.
That I think one of the justices said so well. He said, "Justice delayed is justice denied." So that's supposedly one of the goals of our country.
Mm-hmm.
Except in this one particular case, where in this case, everything is turned upside down. The idea is not to have justice.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is not to have an adjudication of what the truth is or what the facts are. The idea is to delay and delay and delay as much as possible. Now, of course, I can understand in a sense why a person in that position would want to delay, because
of course.
The evidence is so overwhelming of guilt. But it is not the position or the authority or the purpose of the courts to abet someone who's using the system to basically allow things to go through to a point where people will actually be voting, not knowing whether one of the persons who is a candidate for the presidency has committed all these crimes. Now, I say that because in the case that they took up, whether the president has immunity. And of course, there have been numerous scholars. You don't have to listen to me. I mean, there's people who are far, far wiser than I am, who are experts in mm-hmm. this, who have laid out the precedents of United States versus Nixon, United States versus Clinton, even people who voted against impeaching the president said that the president could be criminally tried. There were a whole bunch of them, even people in the Republican Party. But what's very troubling is, let's say that the Supreme Court honestly wanted to make an effort to define the limits of presidential immunity. Let's
mm-hmm.
say that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, I got that part of it. But why would you delay hearing of the case 7 weeks till almost the end of April, when you were in February? Why would you do that?
Not only that, but they made a decision on the state voting thing so quick.
Right, exactly.
But for this, when it comes to the ex-president, it's taking so long.
Exactly. And here's the thing that's crazy about it, though. no matter, you know, whether you're a conservative, liberal, whatever you are. Let's play this out. Mm-hmm. Let's play this out. Now, in this case, of course, I think it's pretty clear that there's no immunity.
Why would you give immunity?
They'll eventually, whatever they do, it will come down with a decision that there's no immunity because the precedents are there. And obviously, logic is there too, because if you weren't able to be impeached and you committed high crimes, then the only thing that could be done would be to try the person after they left the presidency.
Yeah.
Also, they obtained search warrants for the president's home in Mar-a-Lago. They brought indictments. They brought indictments in Florida, and they brought indictments in Washington, D.C. If the idea was that the president didn't have the immunity, then it would seem to me that his attorneys would have made a motion before the Supreme Court to cancel those cases. But they did not do that. They did not do that because the implication always was that there could be a trial for, you know, crimes because he was no longer in office. Here's the other thing, though, that's even more disturbing and more frightening. Let's say, though, that the trials, convict him.
Yeah.
Let's say the trials convict him. He's convicted of these crimes as a private citizen.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes president. He says, I'm going to pardon myself.
Exactly.
What does the court do then?
Why is no one thinking of this?
You see, because that's going to be a far, far more politically explosive issue than now.
Yeah.
Because the thing to do would be this. Hear the case on an expedited schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The cases go to trial.
Okay.
He's either found guilty or he's found innocent. The people know when they go to vote that they had these two major trials. I'm not talking about the state cases in New York or Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
That's something completely else. That is not subject to the pardon power. But he's either convicted or he's found innocent or it's a hung jury. Okay. Either way, then the society benefits. If he's found not guilty, then he's found not guilty.
That's good.
It's hard to believe, but he's found not guilty.
It's hard to believe.
Even if there's a hung jury, okay, we didn't get 12 jurors to agree. Okay, I'm good with that too. There was the one juror who didn't agree. That's the American system.
Mm-hmm.
He's free to do what he has to do. But this is insanity, though. You're basically now going to go into the pardon power, which is like a totally new area of law, and make a decision that could be catastrophic, literally, as to the reaction of an already divided country. And it makes absolutely no sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense to me. But again, the problem is also one of the things I talk about, and you know, because you were in one of my classes, both of my classes, is that we suffer from a lack of belief.
Yeah.
This is what the illness of our country is. There's a lack of belief. And by lack of belief, I mean to say a lack of belief in certain principles and guideposts and rules that seem to have escaped our government. You know, I mean, what else could you say?
There's nothing to say.
Like
we've talked before, like, it's just, we have these rules, but the rules are not being applied.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're all thinking, like, not that I would do it, but, like, if I did do it, would I get the same treatment? Yeah. Would I, if I was on, like, if I had, like, 91, what, like, charges or whatever.
Yeah.
And I wanted to run as president, I mean, I couldn't because I'm an Asian woman and I probably wouldn't get a lot of votes, but like
right.
But, like, let's say, like, ideally,
yeah,
you know, like, would I get the same treatment, you know?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think what's crazy, too, though, and which is very troubling, that we know, of course, that there's not equal justice. We know that.
We know that, yeah. I mean,
it's gone on since probably the founding of the country.
Since day one of America.
Day one. But the thing that's troubling is, you know, the case of the obstruction, that has to be proved. In the case of the situation down in Georgia, the conspiracy case, which is a RICO case, mm-hmm. that has to be proved. In the case of, you know, the New York case with Michael Cohen, of course, that has to be proved. But the one case that's the most egregious of all the cases is the documents case, for two reasons. First of all, the crime that is being charged in multiple counts is the crime of the possession of those documents, that the mere possession of those documents is a crime. And what makes the case even more egregious, though, is not even the possession of the documents, which is, as I said, is a crime, but the repeated efforts on the part of governmental agencies to negotiate with the ex-president to have the documents returned, whereas there wouldn't have been any need or purpose for the Justice Department to get involved in it. But what we saw was that instead of the cooperation and the removal of the documents to their rightful place, which was, you know, the National Archives and everything, it was resisted. The documents were hidden. The documents were moved around.
That's so suspicious. That just screams like,
yeah,
suspicious like behavior.
Right, but here's the other thing that is troubling too. There's a movie, I've talked about it before, I think everybody should see it. It's called Reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this woman. She had been in the military,
mm-hmm.
served our country. And I don't know whether she transmitted a document to somebody. I guess she saw herself as a whistleblower. But it was one document.
One.
That was all that it was. She went to prison for like 5 years.
No, I saw someone that was like,
you know,
they had the, like, they had possession of, like, you know, special documents, and they got sentenced to like 17 years.
Everybody has gone away.
What's taking so long for this man to go away?
Well, because they you have unequal justice. You see, what you have basically in our country is, yes, you have the justice. You have the justice of money.
Yeah.
The injustice of money.
Yeah.
But you also have the injustice of patriarchy. You also have the injustice of a white man of stature versus, in the case of Reality Winner, a poor woman with no stature.
Yeah.
So there's a completely different judgment.
That's
for
that. That's true, yeah.
But there shouldn't be any different judgment. The judgment is, the law is the law.
The person is a person.
The person, I mean, it's just like, you know, like when you see a lot of these cases that you read about where the agencies, the institutions
uh-huh.
that are supposed to be protecting us are asleep or they don't care or they're indifferent. And that's why there's a disaffection in people's minds about how the government works. And that's how the ex-president has gained all these followers. Because many people say, well, the system isn't working, nothing is there. But he and the rest of these people are part of it.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people in the country don't understand that. You see, that's the problem.
So frustrating.
They don't understand it. And you can and the other thing, of course, is how a lot of the institutions that we rely on, like the police is one example.
Mm-hmm.
That there was an article in the New York Times about lawsuits against the police. The New York City government paid out $500
million
over the last 6 years for police misconduct.
$500 million over the past 6 years.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the people that were harmed had their convictions vacated. They should not have been. They should not have been arrested. They should not have been convicted.
Uh-huh.
And this happened innumerable times. So that's an institution that people are supposed to look up to.
Yeah.
But you have a case like that. You have a case with. You have a case with our industries, our corporations.
Yeah.
I'm gonna mention Boeing again. We're back again.
Weeks
go by, and again now, they've been cited again for faults in quality control. This is like the third or fourth time.
It's just like,
you know,
these institutions, these people, like they just don't care.
Well, it's they don't care, but they're enabled by the system that allows them to not care. Because what's happened in our country, you know, there's a very interesting, relatively new story about Liberty University.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could talk a little bit about that after I say a couple of words on it. But this is supposed to be a religious school.
Uh-huh.
And rampant abuse, lack of security, lack of follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Like, they're paying $14 million because of their lack of notification for their students, sending like messages out. At least here at UNLV, like we'll get messages like instantly if there's like, even if they're just running a test, which is like great, amazing, awesome, right? But I don't like the, it's just like Christian University.
Yeah.
And you just, a lack of care for these children who want to attend your school.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to protect these kids?
Yeah. You know? it's we've seen it in a lot of universities in this country. We saw it in Stanford.
Yeah.
With Brock Turner, and how he got a term off or something or whatever it is.
All these universities that like have like hazing. And,
yeah. Yeah. Sure. Well, Northwestern.
Yeah.
Certainly. That went on for years.
Mm-hmm. Just all these universities, yeah.
It's a lack of belief there too, though. It's a lack of belief there too because, you know, I used to do sports coaching and everything, and you have people in charge of the football program, and you know, I mean, if you don't know, you shouldn't be involved in it, but you know that there's a certain discipline, there's a certain code of behavior.
Yeah, you're the coach. You have to be there for your players.
Yeah, of course.
You're kind of like another.
Yeah.
Like maybe like another like parental figure.
Yeah, well, of course. What's interesting about that, Gabby, which is really interesting to me, you know, there's always been issues with, you know, women being mistreated, gymnastics, and all the rest of it. But they're starting to come out with more and more cases about men being abused.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. They had, you know, stuff at University of Michigan, the wrestling team at Ohio State, Northwestern University. I mean, so it's everywhere. But it's also a lack of responsibility from the people who run the institutions.
Yeah.
It's basically laying down the law to the people who run the athletic program that, listen, nothing like that will be tolerated. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's what they don't do. Well, anyway, we've wrapped up a very busy show. We could probably go on for hours, but as I say, our time is of a limited nature.
Yep.
But we look forward to seeing all of you next week, and we wish you the best and be safe. And
thanks for listening.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1, at UNLV.nevada.edu, or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.